Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Music, 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 music. It's the last show of the year. Cha-cha, cha.
We're gonna party like it's 1999?
2016?
It doesn't have the same ring.
We're almost there.
Almost, almost.
How exciting.
Wow, what a year.
A year has gone by. That's great. Hooray!
It feels weird because we didn't start the show how we normally start. Whatever, let's just keep going.
Oh my goodness. Hey everyone. Shoot, you're listening to the final episode of the Command Zone of 2015.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And it's Jimmy Wong.
I was very careful. I did not want to forget.
I know. You had it.
I've never forgotten before in any of the episodes.
The listeners don't see this, but you just pushed the button and it just said that. So I don't know where you got that button from.
Automated. How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Yeah, you've made it back. The real Josh on the show tonight, thank goodness. this is our final show of 2015. It's been an amazing year. So the show today, we have a lot of giveaways, for one, because we love giving you guys stuff for free. And we're also going to talk about some of the Oath of the Gatewatch leaks and then do a year in review, which is exciting.
Very exciting. And when we were putting together this show, I thought, is there enough stuff for a whole show? With highlights and your interview and all, there's a lot.
Yeah, you said that, by the way, a few times about certain topics that, like,
because in my mind, I'm always like, man, I don't know, I'm doubtful. Will that actually be a show? It's always a show.
Yeah, which is good, which means we're not going to run out of material anytime soon. Don't worry, listeners. Okay, so a lot of stuff has happened, huh?
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, this was newsworthy, and this again made our last podcast seem like we were in the Stone Age talking about cards.
It's kind of annoying. Ain't gonna lie. Leaks. Leak City. I mean, this boat is taking on a lot of water.
That's my favorite way of putting it.
So if you do not know, if you're not part of the Twitterverse or the social
internet.
Media or just you don't follow Magic online that much, I mean, Magic the Gathering, the game online, not the digital product, then you may not know, but Oath of the Gatewatch had a ton of spoilers. Sorry, not spoilers, leaks.
Leaks.
So... do they know where it's come from now? Assuming it's one of their printing
it
companies.
It looks as though... So what happened is it got spread around on an Imgur album, also on an Instagram account. I don't know where it came from. I think that's aside the point. But basically, it just showed a ton of... all the new expeditions, a lot of the mythics in the set, and the sort of the big reveals of Oath of the Gatewatch. And it was all posted online and went everywhere, and it was quite the kerfuffle.
Yeah, it's a big deal because Wizards has a certain way that they want the spoilers to be rolled out in a certain order, and they want to explain things in a certain way, and this just puts a crimp in the whole system. We'll talk more about leaks, you know, what they mean for the game, why everyone's sort of in a tizzy about it, but...
whether it's justified, which I think it very much is.
The big thing, really, for most of the listeners is just that there's a whole bunch of cards that we didn't know existed and we now know are going to exist, and so we're going to obviously talk about those. Normally, we like to do... sort of a big set review and talk about everything once it's all out. And we might touch on just the legendary creatures or something, but this is so far in advance of the set that it's like, well, we kind of have to talk about it.
Yeah, and they're all major cards. In a way, it's very exciting, of course, because it's like, oh, cool, you get to see all the cards early. And in a lot of ways, it also, well, again, we'll touch on why it's not as exciting. But to not put a huge damper on things, they're new cards, and we're going to talk about them.
Before we get into all of that and our year in review, which is exciting, we're going to talk about the highlights of this year for the Command Zone, some of our favorite magic related things that happened. Jimmy.
Yeah.
You're a champion.
I'm a champion? Yes, I'm a champion.
So there's something I wanted to mention because it's pretty cool. There was a big tournament held in Venice?
Yeah, Venice Beach, held by Magic the Traveling. You guys may have seen it be retweeted by the main Magic account. It's posts a lot of cool pictures of people playing Magic all over the world.
And so Jimmy entered a 64-man draft tournament. Do you want to run down how that worked?
Yeah, so 64-man draft tournaments means it's a single elimination tournament where you separate into 8 different draft pods of 8 people, because 8 times 8 is 64, times tables, everyone. And each of those draft pods drafts and then plays, and single elimination, only one person will escape from each draft pod lost.
If you don't know, in an 8-man draft pod, if you do it the normal way, there'll be one person that's 3-0.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So everybody from each draft pod that was 3-0, that's 8 people, they then get into the final table, top 8.
Top 8.
And they draft.
It was my first top 8, Josh. I was very excited.
Well, not just that, and I did bury the lead by giving away and calling you a champion, but you took home the first prize.
I did. I won the whole thing.
3-0, 3-0.
And then I drafted the next night, and I went 3-0 again. So I was 9-0 on the weekend, which you told me. I was like, holy crap, I've never won that many of anything in my life in a row, I don't think.
Well, and we had drafted me and you just for fun the night before online and went 2-1. So you were 11-1 on the weekend. That's pretty good. But really,
I'm making the top 8 of a GP at that point, right?
That's, yeah, I mean, for sure. But just being in a tournament setting and going 6-0 and taking home the crown, that's really hard to do.
Yeah, I told everyone about the Command Zone.
Good work.
Like, yo, check it out, guys. We do a podcast about Commander while we draft Balfour Zendikar.
Well, the thing I love about that is, like, sort of like going against the typical stereotypical Commander player is like, no, we're good at Magic.
Yeah, well, I enjoy being good at Magic too.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think a lot of Commander players are good at Magic, but we have this weird reputation in the Magic community, which is we're not as good.
What's that sound?
Oh, it's my so gosh. Peaceful. It's telling us to move on to the next. All right. So that sound you're hearing, that is our holiday giveaway sound.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, to touch on the last thing you just said, because I don't want to leave it too open. We are all great players. But yeah, we do have a bad rep for some reason because we play this fun casual format.
People think we're not serious about Magic and we're not good at Magic. Hey, shut up. We are good at Magic when we want to be. Jimmy Wong just took us down a 64-man draft tournament.
No thanks to my opponent drawing 2 lands and then 4 lands of all the same color in 2 simultaneous games. No, nothing about that.
Whatever. That could have easily happened to you.
That's true. So that sound is our next subject. A holiday giveaway, holiday give a day, extravaganza!
It's holiday time. We're giving stuff away.
Pew pew pew, bing,
bing, bing, bing, bing, bing. Those are sleigh bells now. Bing, bing, bing,
bing, bing, bing, bing, bing,
bing, bing, bing, bing. So that sound, you're going to hear it quite a bit this episode. We've set the alarm to go off every 6 minutes, which means every 6 minutes we're going to give away 3 booster packs.
Nice.
So what we're going to do, as promised, we're going to go onto our Twitter followers list. We're going to randomly select one of our Twitter followers. We're going to call you out on air. And if you hear your Twitter handle and name, you just need to email us your mailing address and you will get your booster packs. So our email is commandcast@rocketjump.com. Again, if you hear your name throughout this episode as one of the contest winners, need your address to give you free booster packs.
Thanks for following us on Twitter as well.
Okay.
Welcome, new followers.
So the bell rang.
Bing.
And we should give away our first prize.
Do you want to announce the random person or me?
I will announce it.
Okay. So the way we did this is we made a CSV giant file of all our followers, put it into a random number generator, and we just hit it. So we have our winners.
Okay. Here we go. The first winner is Twitter name Dawson Has No Creek. @Dawson_Gene, GEANE.
No creek, huh?
I guess Dawson has no creek. So Dawson, Gene, you're a winner.
Congrats, and a funny name, too. I love that, if you guys have seen Dawson's Creek. Congrats, you're our first holiday giveaway extravaganza winner on this
fine
night.
You email us your mailing address. Okay, on to the first topic.
Oath of the Gatewatch.
Oath of the Gatewatch, lots of leaked stuff. I'm going to, if I accidentally say spoilers, please forgive me. I mean leaks.
He means leaks.
Yeah, and Trick Jarrett actually wrote an article that went up on the Wizards website today, basically saying how and why leaks are bad.
Yeah.
So I thought we could discuss that before we get into sort of the meat of what each card specifically is.
Yeah. The article is titled Why Leaks Hurt, and unsurprisingly, Reddit had a negative reaction to it.
Well, Reddit never has a positive reaction.
Yeah.
It's just not an option on Reddit. Like, you can't click the positive button.
Oh, that's right. Even thumbs up has a tinge of like, but I'm right. anyway, so Oath of the Gatewatch experienced a lot of leaks, and there was a huge dump of these cards. And Trick wrote a really nice article sort of talking about what the leaks do, how they affect players, and why it affects specifically Wizards as well. I mentioned this a little bit on Twitter, but one obvious thing is like, look, there's hype that needs to get built up around the set, and there's a whole marketing strategy, and people are paid, and it's their job to figure out how they want to release these in a certain way, what they want to pair with it article wise and this sort of just throws all of that under the bus, and it's a lot of work and a lot of effort that these people are putting in to make a game good for you and fun for you to enjoy that sort of gets taken from them. And it's the same actually that goes for us content creators, and I think this is very important because we've gotten spoilers before, right, Josh? We actually just kind of got on that spoiler train, and it's been really, really exciting because we got to preview some really cool cards for you guys. But there's a chance that we actually don't get that opportunity for this episode or for the episodes in the future for Oath of the Gatewatch because the cards already been spoiled.
They just have less cards now to give away as spoiler cards because a lot of them have been spoiled, and especially the big flashy ones.
Yeah.
I do understand the Reddit side, though, also, which is like, you know, people want to know the info. Yeah. They're not the ones that are out there like leaking the stuff, but if somebody does, like, they're like, well, I'm happy to know it. And I totally get that. I think it's a complicated issue, and you know, the content creator point obviously resonates with us because we're content creators, and
yeah.
You know, I'm sure you've heard this a lot. Content creators don't get much for doing our content. Like, we really just get the satisfaction of doing it. And one of the things is sort of like getting to spoil a card and those exciting moments, you know, getting to interview a Wizards employee or getting to, you know, maybe go to the community cup. Like, there's things that happen, but they're rare, and that's really all we get. So I do feel the pinch from that, and that kind of sucks. But at the same time, I do understand, like, if you're just your average Joe, it's just some information that came out, and what's the big deal? And I do kind of get that.
Yeah, it really isn't. Like, if you look at it like a year down the line, you'll just go like kind of scoff it off, I think. The top comment on Reddit is that this is a good article, et cetera, et cetera, but there's one thing that bugs is WotC does not own the MTG community and sort of talks about, you know, like, it's on them about the leaks and it's their fault and they should figure it out. But here's the thing, like, we are all fans of the game they make. We make content for the game and you guys play the game. Like, as much as you say WotC doesn't own the MTG community, we still get affected in a way that hurts us.
Yeah, but I do know what that Reddit user is saying, which is that it is Wizard's job to stop the leaks.
Yeah,
you cannot ask the community to not want the leaks. I mean, that's just not realistic.
Yep.
And you know, it's unfortunate because it's demand versus supply kind of getting mixed up. Like, they're saying like, oh my gosh, that was only 6 minutes.
That was 6 minutes. We can't ever, actually, maybe this will make our episode go a little faster.
Yeah, that's true, because it's going to make us move on.
We're like, okay, I guess we should talk about the next thing.
All right, Jimmy, your turn.
Okay, I'm going to pick the next winner. Dun, 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 dun. And the winner is at Is It Kyle.
All right, Is It Kyle. Make sure. Commandcast@rocketjump.com. We want your address. Okay. Back to the Reddit thing. All right, whatever. It's unrealistic to say, like, people don't want leaks. Like,
totally.
I don't want you to want them. We totally get it. But on the other hand, you know, it would be nice, I think, if the community sort of wasn't so, like, voracious about wanting. I don't know. That seems crazy, too. Like, you can't ask that of people.
It's really hard. I mean, at the same time, it's like, there are things that can slip up along the way. What if an unfinished card gets leaked? What if it gets leaked at a different time? What if it's just like a cool thing that they wanted to make an event around? And, you know, I'm thinking it more of the employees of Wizards must feel just like they got the sort of rug taken out from under them.
I mean, I feel for those people and it totally sucks, but it is on Wizards to make sure the leaks don't happen, because
it's on any company to make sure there's that sort of stuff doesn't happen for any product whatsoever. And it's tough because, you know, it's human nature to be like, I have a secret and I want to show people, or like, I have something cool to do. I'm going to break the rules. And, you know, it's like it's a chaotic world out there. You can't put a rein on all these things. Maybe it's impossible for Wizards to stop the leaks, you know?
It is possible for them to stop the leaks.
Entirely?
Maybe. I mean, listen.
People always find a way.
Yeah, it's interesting because we both work in an intellectual property field. Mm-hmm. I work in movies. I work for companies like Marvel.
Yeah.
You should see the amount of security that Marvel has so that their stuff does not leak, because they've had leaks in the past. It's insane. They have levels
of... That's such an expenditure, isn't it?
I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
How much do you want to stop it? Marvel has security that rivals like nuclear missile silos. No joke. There are like devices we're required to use that they use in nuclear missile reactors.
Jeez.
So
pretty high level security.
Yeah,
stuff,
now, man. I'm not saying Wizards has to do that, but I'm just saying, like, Marvel didn't go, well, community don't want, because that's a stupid that's a stupid thing to say. Sorry, I'm not calling them stupid. It's just a ridiculous thing to say, because you're saying, hey, people don't want to devour our product.
Yeah, I don't think that's the point of the article.
Yeah, I don't either.
But that is true. We're going to want it no matter what. I mean,
if you do your job right, they want it.
Yeah, and clearly it means they're doing their job right, because everyone wants this new information. So
yeah,
props to Wizards. I mean, maybe Hasbro is going to have to step in and sort of help out in this situation, see if they can increase security measures.
There probably has to be some really stringent security protocols put into place that aren't there now. It can definitely be done. It's just, like I said, it's on Wizards. They need to do that.
Yep. All right. So That's the leaks. That's we're talking about the leaks, talking about the leaks, talking about the leaks. So let's talk about the leaks.
Let's talk about the leaks. A couple disclaimers. One is there's a really good chance more stuff gets leaked between now and when you hear this.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sorry if we're a little behind. That's another thing that sucks about leaks, but they're not controlled. They're not on a schedule. We're just going to talk about what we know now. Sorry if new stuff came out. That's what happened between last episode and this, and that's just the way it is.
I don't think it's gonna. There's going to be a bigger dump of information between these two, but yeah, we're pretty much we're almost looking like the whole freaking set right now.
It's very possible that somebody just leaks the rest of it. I mean, they are obviously have access, so.
Yeah. Why don't they just leak the comments so I know how I'm going to draft it? Just kidding.
Because
just
they don't think kidding. They don't understand that people want to know that stuff also. We should say or apologize that the video quality on a lot of these cards we're going to talk about is going to be lower. That's another downside is just that a lot of these are like cell phone pictures. So that's all we've got. So, but we are going to talk about the cards.
Yeah.
And, you know, there may be some people out there that are saying, well, if leaks are bad, why are you going to talk about them? I mean, even Trick in his article said one of the downsides of leaks is that people who are more enfranchised and go online and check things now have an advantage over people who don't.
Yeah.
So once it's leaked, it's actually incumbent upon us to spread it as much as possible so that we, you know, mitigate that advantage.
Yep.
So that's why we're going to talk about it.
Because we're good people.
Yeah. Also, it gives us content to talk about because we're always looking for that.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
And then the last thing we'll say is a disclaimer that we do not know 100% that these cards are real, but obviously based on the fact that Wizards on their website came out and talked about leaks, you can assume they're probably real.
Yep.
All right.
They are.
The first card we're going to talk about is actually a spoiler and not a leak.
Oh, thank goodness.
So this was actually officially released.
There's only a couple of these on this list.
And it has a new mechanic, and it's very interesting because they've said that this set is going to be, what was the wording? Focused?
Yeah.
Towards Two-Headed Giant?
Yeah, the pre-release especially. I know they wanted to emphasize Two-Headed Giant. And our friend Gavin Verhey actually organizes that experience. So that'd be cool if maybe there's a little designer gameplay crossover. Very exciting.
Pretty cool. This should be exciting to Commander players because we're used to just having more than one person versus one person in a game. Yeah. So this should be right up our alley. The card is called Crush of Tentacles.
It's also a Commander card.
Yeah, it seems really good. It's 4 and 2 blue. It says, return all non-land permanents to their owner's hands. But if Crush of Tentacles' surge cost was paid, put an 8/8 blue octopus creature token onto the battlefield. So, as you may have guessed, it has surge, which is the new mechanic. The surge cost is 3 and 2 blue, so it's actually one less than the regular casting cost of the spell. And it says, you may cast this spell for its surge cost if you or a teammate has cast another spell this turn.
Teammate.
So that's the Two-Headed Giant part. It also may have some ramifications in Commander, depending on how you play, if you play with teams or you play.
Right.
A lot of people play Two-Headed Giant.
Oh, boy. Here we go. It's
okay, here we go.
6 minutes.
Well, we're going to get good at this. We're going to get fast. Okay. Yeah, okay. And the next one, here we go.
You should be excited, actually. Here, I'm going to get excited.
This is what the next person's going to win, just like the last two person won. It is Houston at TNS Ginger. Hey, I think that guy is the co-host of Tap and Sack, the podcast.
Hey.
Yep. So
Houston.
He's the coolest ginger I know.
Nice.
I think that's his catchphrase. Yep. You've won some packs. Email us, commandcast@rocketjump.com, your address. Okay.
Houston, we have a booster.
Had to do it. He's never heard that before. Okay, so surge, again, we're assuming the surge mechanic is you pay the surge cost or you're eligible to pay the surge cost if you or a teammate has cast another spell this turn. So
that's kind of cool. So this will work in Two-Headed Giant. Two-Headed Giant, by the way, if you don't know, you play with a player alongside you and you guys take your turns together and then your opponent's team takes their turn together and cards
and you
that say...
And you share a life total
of 30 usually and cards that say opponents apply to everyone. So there are certain little rules here and there. But yeah, Crush of Tentacles is really interesting.
I think it's definitely playable in Commander, not even if you don't play with teams, because you're so often or so much more often going to be able to cast a spell and then, you know, still have five mana available. Also, there's stuff like Gitaxian Probe that just costs 0.
Yeah, exactly.
That might be playable in Modern. I mean, it returns all non-land permanents to their owner's hand, and if you paid Surge, you get an 8/8 Octopus.
Yeah,
so everybody's got nothing, but you've got an 8/8.
They have some lands, and that's about it. They can replay some stuff, but yeah, an 8/8 is pretty impressive. Yeah, I can see this doing great even if you have, like, 8 mana. Heck, even if you had to, if you just had 8 mana but the board was so crazy, I would totally just play a 3-drop and then Crush of Tentacles and push it back to my hand just so I can get an 8/8, you know?
Oh, for sure. Totally worth it.
Yeah.
Get an 8/8 and still send everybody's permanents back to their hand. I mean, it's a board wipe with upside. Seems good.
I'm looking forward to seeing more teammate-based cards, because then we could actually have a real episode on
Secret Partners,
which is a format that we've talked about on the show a couple of times. All right, moving on. We have a couple of new Planeswalkers. We know that there are going to be four Planeswalkers here, guaranteed. We have Nissa, Chandra, Gideon again, correct, and then Jace.
I'm not sure if there's... I don't know how it's going to work.
Either way, I think I might be...
Actually, on the Masters of Modern podcast last episode, I guessed it. And we predicted that Nissa and Chandra would be in this set. So we got that prediction, right?
Yeah, and they also have this art on the... I think they released potentially the boosters for Oath of the Gatewatch. So it's Gideon, Jace, Chandra, and Nissa. And they're all like holding up their hands. They're like doing this.
They're like...
In the promo art.
Cool.
No one can see what just happened.
You want to read Nissa?
Yeah, let's talk about Nissa. One green for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. Put a 0/1 green plant creature token onto the battlefield. Her -2, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. And her -7, you gain X life and draw X cards, where X is the number of lands you control.
Card seems really good. It's a token generator. It gives +1. It's a token pumper. Also good in 5-color Marchesa.
Yeah, this
and
is
similar. It's got card draw.
It's similar to the Gideon in this set, where it comes down and immediately has a very permanent-ish effect on the board. It's not an emblem, but it puts a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control, and Nissa stays alive.
Yeah. Seems really good. And any Planeswalker that's cheap like this, which is a 3 CMC, is going to be very good. I mean, even if you just look at it like an enchantment that created a 0/1 every turn, that's a good card.
Yeah.
And this one also does other stuff.
Yeah, I could totally see this going in a token deck. For one green, that ability to affect the entire board is really powerful. There's another ability on an old Ajani, Caller, I forget what it is, Steadfast, I think. But he costs 4 mana, and it's white. So Nissa definitely, you can see where she wants to have fun. She wants to be going off in like an elf travel deck or something.
I wonder if this card will be modern playable, because it is 3 CMC, which is a sweet spot.
Modern elves? I could totally see that. Maybe. I know nothing about modern. Kessler, tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay, on to the next card. It is Chandra Flamecaller. So we got a new Chandra here. It's 4/2 red, so 6 mana for a 4 loyalty planeswalker. Her +1 is put 2/3/1 red elemental creature tokens with haste onto the battlefield. Exile them at the beginning of the next end step. So you get basically a ball lightning.
Yeah.
Just split into two creatures. Her 0 is discard all cards in your hand, then draw that many cards +1. That's interesting. So it's basically like a Wheel of Fortune +1.
Just
no,
for yourself.
Winds of Change
Winds
plus
of
one.
Change, yeah.
Yeah, for yourself. That seems really good, and it's a 0 ability. And then her negative X is Chandra deals X damage to each creature. This card seems awesome.
Yeah, especially for EDH players. I don't think you'll be casting this too often in Modern ever. Maybe
yeah,
in
6.
Standard. But like the -X where you can just do 2 damage to each creature is incredible. Or
-3.
X damage or 3, yeah. Or even 4.
Yeah.
So, Prophet of Crucifix, it'll kill that right away.
This has got card draw and a Wrath ability on it, and the put 2/3/1 elemental creature tokens with haste on the battlefield. It's actually really good, especially in red decks that have a lot of sac outlets.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can attack if you want to, but a lot of times you might just... That might be creating 4 mana if you have an Ashnod's Altar out.
That's a really good point.
So, I don't know. This card seems extremely good to me. It's card draw in red.
Yeah. Good old Chandra. She's had a lot of iterations over the years, so I'm glad to see one that has so much flexibility, and I'm glad that it costs that much, because for us, it's great. You know, like, it means they can power her up a little bit more for costing more than your regular Planeswalker.
It'll probably keep the cost a little bit under control, like, dollar-wise, too, because, you know, like, Nissa,
yeah, totally.
If she gets played, it's 3 mana. Planeswalker, it could be playable in, like, Eternal formats, and that's going to just push the price, like, way up, whereas Chandra's 6 mana, so there's no way it's really playable. And like,
I love her draw ability. For 0, you get to discard your whole hand and draw that many cards +1.
So you actually come out ahead on cards too.
Yeah,
it's very good.
Yeah, I love recycling your hands in EDH. I think it's something that gets underrated. All right, next up we have Worldbreaker, 6 and a green for a 5/7 creature Eldrazi. He's breaking the world. He's devoid, so that's a new keyword that was introduced in the most recent set, and it says this card has no color. And then when you cast Worldbreaker, exile target artifact, enchantment, or land. That's pretty good. It has a reach, because it's breaking the world, skies and all. And for 2 and a colorless mana, so that's the diamond symbol. Man, so many new things about this card. So 2 and a colorless mana, sacrifice a land, return Worldbreaker from your graveyard to your hand. Hey.
That seems pretty good, because they can just, it's really hard to get rid of it permanently. You know, I guess they can exile, obviously, or tuck it. Oh, or they can give away something.
Oh, Worldbreaker breaking some packs onto people's, I don't know, that doesn't make any sense. All right. Is it you or me?
It's you.
All right. We have at the double EE, so Elrod Lee.
Elrod Lee. Commandcast at rocketjump.com. We need your address. Okay.
Conveniently, your name is in the list right next to Tolarian Community College and Ben Bateman. So
you're pretty good.
Yeah, very random lucky.
Okay, cool. So again, Worldbreaker, 2 and a diamond. Sacrifice a land. Return Worldbreaker from your graveyard to your hand. It's a 5/7. It also says when you cast it, exile target artifact, enchantment, or land. I wish it was enter the battlefield.
Yeah. You know, if at sorcery speed, you can sacrifice this to Ashnod's Altar and then pay one colorless to return it with a land to your hand.
You don't even have to pay the colorless. Ashnod's makes the diamond.
Right, but you have to pay 3 total.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, like,
oh, right.
It could be a green
mana. It could
mana.
Be a green, that's correct.
Yeah, because Ashnod's does make the colorless mana. Oh, side tangent. Something we've sort of learned or heard from people recently, a number of people have come in and said, well, what if I've got a mono green deck, but I play Birds of Paradise in it? Can I tap that Birds of Paradise saying I'm tapping it for red? And the commander rules say if you add a color other than your general's color identity to your mana pool, it turns into colorless mana.
Yeah.
And that way Birds of Paradise can actually produce colorless mana and I can cast Kozilek with
it. Oh, unless you're playing a 5-color deck.
Yes, exactly.
Very interesting.
And the ruling right now is that you could do that.
Sounds about right.
Yep, something we should mention. It's a nice little loophole. Okay, on to the next card. We've got Kozilek's Return.
Big Daddy Kazi.
This is a instant. It's 2 and a red. It has Devoid. Kozilek's Return deals 2 damage to each creature. So 3 mana, deal 2 damage to each creature. It's fine.
Yeah.
But whenever you cast an Eldrazi creature spell with converted mana cost 7 or greater, you may exile Kozilek's Return from your graveyard. If you do, it deals 5 damage to each creature.
This, I think, is very powerful.
It's just a free wrath on top of a huge creature.
Yeah. As soon as you do this once, it just sits in your graveyard and it's just ready to very thematically pop out of the ground and just go like, I'm back, poof, and hit everything even harder the second time.
I like how Kozilek sounds. I'm back.
I'm back. Everyone's like, no, please. Yeah, this card's sweet. It's him busting out of the ground the second time. It's super thematic. I mean, if you wanted to straight up Vorthos it, you could only, you just would never do the May ability until you actually cast a Kozilek.
That's true. It's an instant, too, so you could cast it first, deal 2 to everything, then cast your 7 drop, deal 5 to everything, so you actually deal 7 to everything in one turn. That's something we can do in our format because we can have 12 mana. Yeah.
12 mana, however much you need.
Yeah. Seems good.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's going to be a real house in Limited, too, because just a 3 mana Wrath on the Stick is, at instant speed, it's like Anger of the Gods.
I'm back!
I'm back! Next up, we have Sphinx of the Final Word. Always got to have a Sphinx in these sets. 5 blue, 5/5 creature Sphinx. Sphinx of the Final Word can't be countered because it's sitting on the Hedron looking super cool. He has flying and hexproof. Oh boy. Instant and sorcery spells you control can't be countered by spells or abilities.
So he can't be countered. And then once he's out, or she.
Instance and sorceries.
Instance and sorceries you control, right? Can't be countered.
Yeah.
Wow.
His flavor text is kind of like the Mother May I. He answers questions as readily as he asks them, but his answer is always no.
It's interesting because he actually, based on that flavor text, you'd think it's a permission style deck, but right. He actually sort of counters permission style decks.
Yeah, because they're asking, hey, can I cast the Sphinx? He's like, no.
Yeah, I guess so. You can always cast the Sphinx. It can't be countered. And then once it's out, none of your instants or sorceries can be countered. So it seems like a very good answer to like the Mizzix deck.
Oh, yeah.
Or a Talran deck, or one of those decks that's annoying in your playgroup and won't let you cast your spells and keeps countering them.
Yeah, so, he's just like a nice, and he's hexproof, so he really is kind of like an enchantment.
Yeah, I do like having more answers to that style of deck. It seems good. It's expensive, but I could definitely see it seeing some play. See it seeing some play? I can see it seeing some
play. I've seen it seeing some play.
Yeah, I've seen you seeing it. See some play.
Dude, this Sphinx, man, it can see a lot
it
of things.
It messes with your mind.
Messes with your brain. All right. Next up. You want to talk about this one?
Yep. It is Kalitas, Traitor of Geist.
Get.
Oh, sorry. Get.
Of Geist.
I was reading ahead. I won't spoil that.
You won't spoil that. Okay.
Kalidas, Trader of Gets, 2 and 2 black for a legendary creature, vampire warrior. It's a 3/4. If a non-token, has lifelink. If a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, instead exile that card and put a 2/2 black zombie creature onto the battlefield, and then pay 2 and a black, sacrifice another vampire or zombie, put 2/1/1 counters on Kalidas.
Wow, that versatility is nuts.
It's just you get 2/2 zombies anytime an opponent's creature dies, and it exiles those creatures, so all your like straight destroy removal turns into exile removal.
Yeah, that's actually really cool.
Yeah, it still won't kill like a indestructible guy if you just use destruction, because it has to be dying.
Right.
But still, and then you just get 2/2 zombies every time that happens. This seems very good.
It seems really good. I like this card. The art is really bizarre in it. It looks like it's out of another set in Generation of Time.
It does look like one of the old cards. Yeah, and then the second ability, what do you think?
It depends on how much in Limited. I think how many vampires and zombies are rolling around in Oath of the Gatewatch.
It could be
something set up for Shadows of Innistrad, maybe? Over Innistrad? You know what time it is. Every time it goes off, I think something's wrong. Yeah, like, oh, what's happened?
Why didn't you turn off your phone, Josh?
It's the Holloway Gift Giveaway Extravaganza time.
All right, go ahead.
Someone's won 3 booster packs. The winner we have this time around is going to go ahead and be at the JYLOX, Mark Jason Paulino. Congratulations, buddy.
Congratulations.
Email us, commandcast@rocketjump.com, with your mailing address, and we'll get these packs out.
Can I just call him MJP for short?
MJP. Hype. All right. Kalidas, I like it. I could totally see you making a commander deck out of this if you wanted to. I think this is really sweet.
And it could be like a zombie tribal. Vampire or zombie,
yeah, which is great.
Or Zampire.
I like Zambies.
Vombi. That sounds like Bambi.
Does sound like Bambi. Okay, we have some new lands. This is really exciting.
I love lands.
Yeah, we knew that there were going to be ways to generate colorless mana at the common slot. So this actually gives us a little bit look into what the limited format might be shaping up to be. The first up is the Sandwalker from Star Wars. It's Holdout Settlement.
It's totally like there's Jawas inside that thing.
Yeah, except it's like probably a little smaller. It's a common land. You can tap it to add 1 colorless tier mana pool or a diamond. You can tap it. Tap an untapped creature you control. Add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
So it's sort of like Leafspring Drum?
Huh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I could totally see this being in a King Makar deck.
That's true.
Make some mana.
Yeah.
Untap,
this is,
and tap him.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's not great for our format, but it actually depends on how much you need or want colorless mana, diamond mana. If there's a lot of good cards that you want to put in, that actually may be good in Commander.
Yep.
The other common land we have right now is Crumbling Vestige. It's a land, obviously. It comes into play. It enters the battlefield tapped. When Crumbling Vestige enters the battlefield, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
Oh, cool.
It's almost like you have a Lotus Cobra, although you don't actually need the Lotus Cobra. And then it taps to add diamond mana. So when it comes into play, it gives you a mana of any color. And from then on, you just tap to add colorless mana.
That's cool. Now, of course, this doesn't work if you want to put it into play and then later on cast an instant at another phase, because as you move to your next phase, that mana will disappear. But it is great for, I think, anyone aggressive, because you're going to be spending that mana usually. And in general, it's really sweet. It comes in. I could totally see a Tron deck even playing this to get an Ancient Stirrings off it. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Play Crumbling Vestige, Ancient Stirrings, pass. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
So now we have some lands that are in another language.
So we've got translations. If the translation turns out to be like slightly different, we apologize.
Yeah, and these translations are from the internet, so we source them. They should pretty much be what we think they are, though. Blighted Crossroad is the first one. You can tap it to add a diamond to your mana pool, or you can tap and pay 1 life, add 1 mana of any color, and you can spend this only to cast Devoid spells.
It's really interesting you can add a mana of any color, but you have to spend that mana to cast a spell that technically has no colors.
It is the Blighted Crossroad, after all.
This feels like it's going to be useful in the limited environment or in the standard environment, and less so to us, because you're just not going to have a ton of Devoid spells in your deck.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that gets used.
The next one is Seagate Ruins. It's a land, obviously. You tap it to add diamond or colorless to your mana pool. Or you can pay 2 and diamond and tap the Seagate Ruins and draw a card. Holy crap. but it says activate this ability only if you have no cards in hand.
That's kind of cool still.
Still decent.
It's a rare land.
Yeah, and decks that want to like take their whole hand, dump it in their graveyard, and recur stuff in their graveyard, that might be really good. This is the type of ability that is broken. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Library of Alexandria. Listen, it's not as good, but where you read it and you go, well, how often am I going to have seven cards in my hand? And then it's like, well, if I build my deck to do that, then I'm just drawing twice as many cards as everybody.
Yeah, because I'm always just getting down to that seven.
This, I wonder, someone will definitely try and break this in in Standard, although it does cost basically four mana to do it, so maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's okay.
All right. I think it's all right. Next up, we got Spire's Needle. And this one enters the battlefield tapped. It looks like there's going to be a whole series of these. You can tap it to add red or white to your mana pool. So it's a dual land. And for two red and a white, it becomes a 2/1 elemental creature with double strike until end of turn. It's still a land.
We predicted this card on the Masters of Modern when I was on.
Really?
Yeah. Together, we all sort of put it together. And I think we even got the casting cost. The guys wanted it to cost only two mana. And I was like, that'll never happen. It's going to cost it's going to cost three or four. Yeah, this is definitely time to give something away.
Give some stuff away.
This is really amazing to do the show this way.
To force right into it, yeah.
Okay.
It still scares me every time it goes off, even though it's so peaceful.
All right, this one was going to Caleb Persia. That's Caleb. At G-U Minion.
Hey.
At Goom Minion.
Goom Minion.
All right, commandcast at rocketjump.com. We need your address. All right.
You did it.
So this is the creature land, folk land, that becomes a 2/1 double striker, similar to Lumbering Falls and Shambling Bent. We're assuming there's going to be two more. We don't know what those are.
Yep.
But that'll complete the entire cycle.
Yeah. Now the most exciting land of all of them, I think, because I love Limited. We have a whole cycle of uncommon allied colored lands that enter the battlefield tapped. They're basically guild gates.
They're exactly guild gates because they have no other thing besides tapping for two different colors, the allied colors, and then coming into battlefield
taps.
Holy
crap, though.
But I love drafting lands, I'm excited.
Did you see the art on these cards?
Yeah,
they all look sick.
They got the hedrons in the background and and these are foil.
A guy, Cliff Childs, drew a couple of them. Yeah, they look really great.
All right, so that is the new cards that are actually in the set. I guess Expeditions are technically like outside the set, right?
Right. So this is the big time, and I think this is actually the most exciting for EDH players as well. So we know now pretty much all of the expeditions in the set. Two of them have been officially spoiled by Wizards, and the rest are now out there for us to consume.
There's some crazy ones.
We might be missing one, actually. I'm not sure. Because there's 25? Yeah, I think we're missing one expedition.
No, there's only 20.
There's only 20?
Yeah, we're missing, I think, one of the filter lands has yet to be, but we're going to assume that it's going to be the last filter land.
Spoiler.
Okay, so the filter lands, obviously, we talked about last episode. All 10 of them are going to be in there. We're assuming right now, I think only 9 are spoiled, but it'd be weird.
It's just like a random.
But that leaves 10 other cards, and we had been predicting, or at least I had, that it would be the creature lands, the folk lands.
I thought so too.
Yeah, so we're not getting those, which is slightly disappointing, except there are some crazy awesome lands in this.
I am not disappointed whatsoever. No. These lands are made for people that play EDH and like Legacy, essentially.
Yeah, so one of them is Ancient Tomb.
This was spoiled at the World Magic Cup.
Yep, and so Ancient Tomb is just a land that taps to add. It used to add two colorless to your mana pool. It still does add two colorless. It just reads as tap, add diamond to your mana pool. And then Ancient Tomb deals 2 damage to you.
This card is great. This could technically go in every single EDH deck.
It's very, very, very good.
It's a great ramp. It's like Sol Ring-esque.
And it's even better in our format because 2 damage is less impactful than it is in a regular format.
Yep, but be careful. The next land, also spoiled at the World Magic Cup, is going to look so good as an expedition. It is Forbidden Orchard. You can tap it to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. And whenever you tap Forbidden Orchard 4 mana, target opponent puts a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token onto the battlefield. So, again, this is, again, good for EDH because sometimes you want to give someone a little blocker. And you can do it at instant speed. You can really forge some good relationships with this card. And this was also in From the Vault Realms, I believe.
And, again, these are not new cards. These cards have existed before. They were just some of them are hard to get and expensive. And, the next one is Dust Bowl. You tap it to add diamond to your mana pool, or you can pay 3 and tap and sacrifice a land, destroy target non-basic land. This card's very good. I actually run it in a few decks, and it's good.
It's pretty sweet.
It's good to just, like, listen, don't play Iona.
Yeah.
Because I may not win this game, but I will just destroy as many of your lands as I can before I go.
Pretty good.
I like that aspect of it.
By the way, we were talking about this, but you could pull these in a draft and they're draft legal or in a sealed legal. So could you imagine dust bowling someone in a game?
Oh my gosh. Legally playing Dust Bowl in a limited format.
Even Ancient Tomb. Oh yeah. My gosh.
This next one is
yeah.
It's basically strip. I mean, it's not, but
it's Wasteland. You could Wasteland someone in limited. Coming to you soon, Oath of the Gatewatch,
it's
everybody.
Actual Wasteland. This is crazy. How much is this card going to be worth at the Expedition?
So currently there is a foil Wasteland. There's actually a few Wastelands that have been printed, surprisingly. For being such an expensive land, it's had a ton of foil versions in the past. There's like a Judge foil and Judge promos, and then the original version from Tempest. The card in its foil version is already like close to $250-$300. This will probably be like half as much, less as at most, $150 maybe.
I bet it'll go up above that. It'll be above $200.
Yeah, it is. It's cool. The art looks great. So you can tap it to either colorless tier mana pool, or you can sacrifice Wasteland, destroy target non-basic land. In Legacy, this plays like a spell because you don't need lands in that format past two, really. So you play Wasteland and you immediately tap it and you destroy a land.
It's basically strip mine in Legacy because people don't play a lot of basic lands, so.
Yep.
And in our format, it'll be basically like another strip mine, and the only reason you don't play Wasteland right now in a lot of decks is because it's freaking expensive.
Yeah, like a $50, $60 card.
The next one is Tectonic Edge.
More land destruction.
Yep, tap, add a diamond to your mana pool, or pay one and tap and sacrifice Tectonic Edge. Destroy target non-basic land, but you can only activate this ability if an opponent controls four or more lands.
Okay.
Never really thought about that before, but that means I can destroy Craig's land even if he only has three, as long as you have four.
That's pretty mean.
Okay.
Speaking of pretty mean, guess what? It's Strip Mine. Strip Mine's also an expedition. You can tap it to add colorless to your mana pool, or you can tap sacrifice Strip Mine, destroy target land.
This card's so good. Every ADH deck needs that card. Again, it's not super expensive, although it's not super, super spendy like Wasteland.
Yeah, totally.
But that's just another way to get a hold of them.
This
Although,
next one,
if you,
however.
If you pull a strip mine, you're selling it.
Ooh, selling it to buy some booster packs, or you could win them.
Bing, bing, bing.
Bing, 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 bing.
I mean, bing, 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 bing.
Okay, congratulations to Chris Bushy. Congrats, you have won the next booster packs on this show. Go ahead and email us, commandcast@rocketjump.com, with your mailing address, and we'll get those out to you.
All right, the next one is Horizon Canopy. You can tap it and pay one life, add either green or white to your mana pool. Or you can pay one generic mana, tap and sacrifice the Horizon Canopy and draw a card.
Yeah, so this card is actually very expensive because it sees a lot of modern play, correct?
Yeah, I believe so. I just know it's expensive.
Yeah.
Which is why it's not in any of my decks, because it's not that good in Commander. It's good.
Yeah,
but
it's a dual land and you can cycle it kind of for a land, for a card. Next up, we have Mana Confluence. This card I love. I have this in a lot of my decks. You can tap, pay one life, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Simple as that.
It's very good. It's just like City of Brass. You know these expeditions that have the gold?
Mm-hmm.
They look cooler.
Yeah, they do.
That's
because
sweet.
They tap for one mana of any color, so they have
more
gold board around it.
The next one is Eye of Ugin, or Eugene, as our friend Megan and Maria would say. Eye of Eugene. It says colorless Eldrazi spells you cast cost two generic less to cast, and you can pay seven and tap the Eye of Eugene. Search your library for a colorless creature card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So for seven mana, you can tutor for a colorless creature card,
then
which
costs two less.
We've really expanded. Well, Eldrazi spells cost two less, so like a devoid creature wouldn't necessarily. We've recently expanded the amount of colorless creatures we might have because we have things like Devoid.
Mm-hmm. This card is sweet. Mm-hmm. I love Eye of Ugin. I used it last night to great effect in my red deck after Iona was played, naming red.
Eye of Eugene.
I played that game, by the way. there was only one card I couldn't cast because I just kept fetching out colorless Eldrazis and duplicants and stuff.
And the last one, you can do the honors.
Yeah, Core Haven. Now,
one of my
this
favorites.
Is a card that we definitely play. One. And you can tap it to add colorless to your mana pool. And for one and a white, you can tap this land, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt by target attacking creature this turn. It's Maze of Ith, but for white decks.
Yep, it's Maze of Ith. It's a second Maze of Ith. It's really, really good.
It's really, really good. And the final lands. Let's talk about the set.
Yeah, it's the filter lands. We talked about Mystic Gate already. These are the lands that tap to add a colorless, or you can pay a hybrid mana of whatever two color combination you want, and then it will sort of, okay, let me read one. Cascade Bluffs, you can tap either a blue or a red, so a hybrid is it, and tap the Cascade Bluffs, and then you can add either two blue, two red, or red and a blue to your mana pool. So you pay a red or a blue, and then you create any combination of two mana that's red or blue.
Kind of cool.
Whew, hard to explain, but yeah.
Hard to explain. And notably, this is fixing in a weird way because it does tap to add colorless, but let's say you're in a Grixis deck and you wanted to cast black, blue, and red spells. If you only had a black mana out and then you play Cascade Bluffs, you actually still cannot tap for
you only
the
have,
remainder of colors.
Yeah, now you only have black and colorless.
Yeah, you have to use one of the lands in there to filter into the any combination you want.
They are very good, though, because they fill the role of dual lands. They don't play come into play tapped.
Yeah.
And well, they were getting pretty spendy.
Yeah, and if you have cards that cost blue, 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 red, 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 or, you know, any kind of that combination of a lot of one color, it's great because you can, you know, make sure that you have it. This land all of a sudden taps for any color combination. You can sort of, I think the black ones especially, because black has a lot of cards that cost
black,
three, black.
Yeah, really good point. Well, those are the leaks, I keep wanting to say spoilers, that we've got so far for Oath of the Gatewatch. There may be more by the time you're hearing this. But as if that was not enough. As if it wasn't crazy, the amount of stuff that got dumped, we actually got our first leaks or look at Shadows over Innistrad.
Mm-hmm.
I read somewhere, and I don't know how people knew this or suspected this, but they think these are the sort of cover cards for the dual decks for Shadows over Innistrad. One is a reprint. It's Geist of St. Traft, so we won't talk about that. The other is not a reprint. It's a new card. So this is our first new card we're seeing from Shadows over Innistrad.
Gosh, I can't believe this got leaked.
It's crazy because that shows you how crazy it is because we're a full set.
Yeah, it's down the line.
Before we should be seeing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's Mindbreaker Demon. This was leaked in a foreign language, so we're going to use a translation. It's 2BB for a creature demon. It's a 4/5 flying trampler.
Flample.
When it enters the battlefield, put the top 4 cards of your library into your graveyard. So you mill yourself for 4. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, if you don't have 4 or more card types in your graveyard, you lose 4 life.
Interesting.
It's sort of, I mean, it's checking things like Tarmogoyf checks things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's basically punishing you if you don't have enough card types. So the card types that can be in your graveyard are like land, instant, sorcery, artifacts, creature, tribal.
Yeah.
Those are all of them, right?
Yeah, a flying planeswalker.
Oh, planeswalker also, right. And Interrupt is an old one, but it's actually been retconned to instant now, so
yeah.
Interrupt wouldn't be separate.
It's interesting. It's very well costed, 4/5 flying trample for 4.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this will see modern play, but I could certainly see this being played in standard, especially if there's no real graveyard manipulation outside of like Treasure Cruise. Because you really
Treasure Cruise will be gone by the time that...
Treasure Cruise
is rotated by the time that Shadows comes out. So.
Yeah, so I'll be interested to see if there is a big graveyard theme.
It'll be interesting to see who wins the next booster pack.
In the Holloway gift, holiday gift gab extravaganza from coming at you hot from Feast to Fiction. No, that's my other show from Command Zone.
We're getting a little loopy because we're just not used to this alarm going off.
It's really messing me up. Every time I hear it, I'm like, what is happening? Oh, right, we're giving stuff away.
Go ahead, Jimmy. Do
okay,
the honors.
Cool. We got a person named at Jai Torres. So at Beast SPL. Straight up send us your mailing address, commandcast@rocketgem.com. We will send you stuff.
All right. So 4/5 flample demon for 4, and it has like a downside. Who knows how hard it'll be to pull that off? Fetch lands will be gone too.
Mm-hmm.
That's for standard. For us, I think it's probably, it's fine. It's just that a 4/5 flample is not even that great.
Yeah.
So why take on the downside of it?
Well, especially when you can play cards like other demons that give you the Phyrexian Arena effect on the stick.
Yeah, very true.
You know.
What it is interesting about it is this idea that, like, is this going to be a set? We know at least this card cares about card types in graveyards. Mm-hmm. Are there going to be more cards in Shadows of Innistrad that care about card types in graveyards?
I hope so. That'd be really cool. I like that. I like that manipulation of the graveyard because it's not Dredge.
Well, Dredge works very well with it because
it certainly
puts more cards into your
That's
graveyard.
That's pretty high on the storm scale, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure Tarmogoyf's getting reprinted based on this. Just kidding, everybody. Don't freak out.
Yeah, that thing just turns your Tarmogoyf into a 4-5. Oh my gosh.
In the last episode, you know how I said, like, oh, this is a way that they could, like, soft ban Sol Ring. And then I got, everyone's like, they're not going to do that. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I just was saying, like, it's interesting to think about.
You and your hypotheticals, Josh.
I know. How dare you? How dare you, like, muse about things?
That's not what we pay you for, because we don't pay you anything.
Yeah, exactly. Pay me. I pay.
All right. Let's move on to the year in review. Hooray. Pew, pew, pew. Pew, 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 pew. We had a great year, 2015. A lot of stuff happened. We came out like with 60-plus episodes. How many episodes did we come out with?
I think 25 was our first episode of the year, so we're on 91 now.
Oh, boy.
So that's 66 episodes.
It's pretty good.
Year.
That's why we're giving something away every 6 minutes.
Yeah, because we totally thought of that.
Totally thought of that.
Why did we pick 6 and not 5 minutes?
I don't know.
We should have picked 12 minutes, by the way. It's way too fast.
I don't know. I would get caught even more off guard. Now sometimes I'm thinking, like, is it going to happen? When was the last time it happened? Oh, God, I'm hoping to get thrown off again when it happens.
It's like looming at all moments.
Yeah, so we're going to cover just sort of what happened over the year and... if you guys haven't heard these episodes that we're going to talk about, we suggest you go back and check them out. There's a lot of good stuff in the past, some of it better than others, of course. But in general, I think we had a pretty good year. I had a blast.
It was our first full year.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we did about, 5 months
of
2014?
Yeah, we started in the summer, like in July, I think.
Yeah, or August or something like that. So our first full year, I feel like we really got our sea legs under us this year. At the beginning of the year, we were still pretty new at doing this. I'm not saying we're great now, we're just better.
Yeah, we're always getting better. That's the point, right?
And it was super fun. I mean, like I said, I did not think this was enough for a big topic, and then we started listing stuff, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot.
Yeah, it turns out magic and just talking about ourselves is gonna take us through.
All right, so some of these are in chronological order, some aren't. The first really big thing that happened in 2015 was the Tuck Rule change.
Yeah. If you guys don't remember what happened originally, you could use cards like Oblation or Chaos Warp to take a commander card and tuck it into an opponent's library if they didn't have a sac outlet or a way to sort of save them, because these cards said shuffle the card into the library. And so you could also put stuff on the bottom of the deck with a card like Hinder. This changed. Sheldon Mennery and the Rules Committee announced that anytime a commander leaves the battlefield and goes to another zone, whether it's your deck, hand, or graveyard, you can choose to put it in the command zone.
This actually applies if it moves zones, not just from the battlefield either. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So
from your graveyard to exile?
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
You can choose to put it into the command zone. I believe that's true. Oh, geez.
It has to be.
Yeah. Anyway, the big sort of earth-shattering thing was that, you know, you can't take their commander, put it into their library somewhere, and basically, like, quote-unquote, turn off their commander in a real way, because, as we know, destroying or exiling doesn't really do it in our format.
Yeah. Interesting.
Do you remember how we announced this? Do you remember the moment we found out?
Kind of. I remember doing a big interview with Sheldon right after and rushing home from dinner.
That was the second. That was, like, 2 days later. But
yeah. We went right on the bullhorn.
When they announced it, we had already recorded our episode. And it was, like, usually we record on Thursdays, and then we release on Tuesdays. What happened is, like, they announced it, like, Monday.
Yeah.
And so Monday during the day, and we're, like, texting furiously because it's a huge earth-shattering thing for Commander. And we're like, how can we have an episode come out and we don't talk about it?
Yeah.
So we had to literally get on, you know, over Skype, record, like, this special. I think it went, I think the opening played, and during the opening we had, like, a peek. And we now bring you this special report. And then we did a whole segment, like a 20-25 minute segment on the Tuck Rule change.
Yeah.
Neither of us liked it at the time.
I still don't really care for it, because
no, I still do not like it. I stand by basically everything we said.
Yeah. It's funny because in the year that we played, no one's changed their decks to reflect this rule change. People still play their Hinders. They still play their Chaos Warps because they're good cards, and if you want to counterspell or whatever.
It just doesn't work against commanders anymore.
And I haven't had to deal with, oh no, my commander would have gone to the whatever, because my decks in general have the ability to give away free booster packs.
Okay.
Hey.
Let me just turn that off. Dan Birkebile, who is at Coach Burke.
Coach Burke.
Coach Burke. Hey, I had a Coach Burke in high school.
I wonder if he's a coach. Is he the coach
in
high school?
It's not. His name wasn't Dan, so it's not the same guy. Also, it doesn't look anything like him. So, Dan, send us your mailing address. Okay, back to the tech rule.
Yeah, it just hasn't affected me at all whatsoever. And so that's why I still don't care too much about it.
I think it has affected me. There are definitely moments where I draw that Chaos Warp, and I'm like, man, in the old days, I could like really mess that guy up for what he's doing, but right. now it's just like, eh, this card's good, but it's not as good. You know, you draw Terminus now and it's like, it's fine.
Yeah, Terminus is fine now.
It used to be like, oh man, Terminus right now is I'm going to probably win.
Yeah, it certainly made Ixodron better in my book because that for sure. you can still just flip a general upside down. You know what also made better in my book? Faith's Fetters.
How dare you?
Like by like a tiny millimeter,
and
it got better.
Faith's Fetters is still not good, even yep. once it's a little bit better. Here All we right. go. Here we go. More
next,
emails. This
the
is
next,
awesome.
The next big thing that happened was Dragon Week.
Oh yeah, Dragon Week.
Yeah. So Dragons of Tarkir came out. We got really excited and decided we're just gonna have a straight up week of dragons and giveaways, and we gave away a ton of stuff, and there was a big winner at the end of it as well.
HD Elaine.
Hey, congrats again to being the Dragon Week winner, the one to take it all home, the greatest dragon of them all. You are the Sarkin of Dragon Week. Congrats.
You're, I guess you're. You know, HD Elaine, Hugo? Hugo?
Yeah, Hugo.
Hugo, you are just forever going to be called that by Jimmy and I. And we did get to meet Hugo at GP Vegas, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I always will refer to him as Dragon Week winner, HD Elaine.
Yeah, pretty sweet. Pretty sweet title.
Dragon you know. Week was a lot of fun. It was something that we sort of spontaneously came up with, which was an entire week of celebrating dragons and magic. If you yeah. followed us on Twitter at that point, every single day we were tweeting out questions and comments about dragons, and you had a chance to win prizes every single day. We had two episodes.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
Come out where we each broke down a dragon deck, and we just really went after it. We had like cool infographics, new graphics posted, yeah. and every day we chose like a winner of the day, and they would go up on the sort of the Dragon Week Talk 7 board and be on our Twitter, and it was a really fun thing.
Yeah, it was really fun. I hope we can do something similar next week. Maybe we'll call it Shadow
next
Week.
Next
week, next year.
Let's do it next year.
Shadow Week.
Shadow
yeah, next
Week.
Next week, good lord. We're giving away enough stuff on this episode. Interestingly enough, the deck I made that week, my Inted the Dreamer deck.
It's a good deck.
It's my
I just
it's
played
one of my
it,
best
like,
decks.
This weekend, yeah.
I decided to go and I powered it up a little more, and it consistently wins now. It's kind of funny because I did not build it expecting a Dragon Tribal deck to kick butt.
To my shame, I never did build the deck that I built on the show. I never built my
hold
built
me,
it in real life.
Me to it.
Maybe someday I will. Scion, that deck is expensive, man.
Yeah,
that Scion deck is really expensive.
There's a lot of dragon in there.
An interesting thing happened because the Tuck rule change and Dragon Week happened sort of back to back. And what that ended up doing is we ended up releasing two episodes in 2 weeks back to back. So this sort of caused us to go into two episode per week mode.
Hooray.
So this was a thing that happened, and we've only recently stopped doing it, but we were doing two episodes a week for a while. I think because we did that and we were like, that wasn't so bad. We could do that every week. And so over the summer,
we ended up shortening our episode length. And I think that was actually the biggest change is we were like, we used to be doing hour half, two hour podcast. And we were like, we could do two 50-minute podcasts, cover more ground and have it be better and more concise and good things.
Yeah. So we tried that out for a long time. And honestly, it worked really well. The only reason we've stopped doing it is it just takes more production time
yep.
because we have to come up with twice as many topics and whatnot.
Edit twice as many videos.
Yep. But we that's the reason we have 91 episodes starting at 25 at the beginning of the year, because we should only do you know 52 in a year, and that's if we don't skip weeks, and we've skipped a couple.
Totally. We had a lot of level up episodes, as we dub them, and other and LR dubs them the same thing. So basically episodes that are there to help you level up your gameplay and go from one place to another. If you guys want to go back and listen to them, we have a lot of really good ones. Notably, episode 30 is called How to Tutor / Mitigating Aggro. Episodes 39 and 40 was the very informative mana bases episode. If you guys are looking to build a mana base or don't know where to start for your EDH deck, go check that out. 41 is all about trading up, sort of how to take your cards and upgrade them into better cards for your deck. 43, episode 43, poly tips and poly tricks. That was a controversial one, so you guys want to check that out if you want to.
It's a really good episode.
I like that one. Episode 71, an episode I'm near and dear to my heart, just called Sandbagging.
Yep, that's a good one too.
And then episode 80, we did Situation Awareness. So all of those episodes are level up episodes. If you want to check out any of those, I would suggest if you want to look back on the year and you missed a couple of those, are definitely some good ones.
Yeah, I like level up episodes. They're not dealing with necessarily specific cards. Like a deck tech is saying, well, this card, this card, this card. And level up episodes are like philosophies about playing Commander or Magic or multiplayer or different, you know, politics or whatever.
Yeah, certainly.
We also finished up the Color Wheel series. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the Top 10 series. We did not finish the Color Wheel series. We still have to do Blue. We've Saving the Best for Last.
Yeah, Saving the Best for Last will be a mega episode, I'm sure, because there's a lot to talk about for Blue. But so, yeah, so we have Top 10 card lists now for each color and artifacts.
Yeah. So those are our sort of some of our meta series. We also started a new meta series, which we called EDH Archetypes.
I like this.
And so episode 68 was our token episode about the archetype of tokens.
And the archetype of giving boosters stuff away. never gets old. Still scares me. All right. The next winner from our Twitter follower list is Lamp. Straight up. At L4MP, L4MP, or Lamp.
At Lamp. It's probably somebody that works at Pixar.
Yeah, go ahead and send us your mailing address, commandcast@rocketjump.com.
So episode 68 was our token, talking about all token decks in Commander, and episode 76 was our Voltron episode.
Hey.
I am excited to get back next year into the flow of the episodes and get to do some more of these. You know, there's a whole bunch more archetypes.
I agree. I'd
love to talk about some. There's Control, there's tons. So we will be continuing that for sure.
Yeah, we also had Del Rey book giveaways. Very exciting. So we partnered up with Spectre Del Rey this year to give away a lot of books. And it's sweet because it's not Magic. It's something outside the world of Magic, but it's very tangentially related, and reading is a good thing to do.
It always warms my heart that we're giving away books, and what warms my heart even more is the amount of people that enter the contest to win a book.
Yeah.
Like, people actually care about winning a book. That makes me feel so good. It actually restores my faith in humanity somewhat.
Mm-hmm. We just had 10 new winners for more books last week on last week's episode, and the first giveaway we ever did was on May 18th for The Warded Man.
The Warded Man, and the most recent one was Elfstones of Shannara, and we are definitely hoping to continue the tradition of giving away all kinds of stuff, but also books next year.
Very cool.
GP Vegas.
Grand Prix Vegas.
Vegas, baby!
Yes, what a great time.
This was...
What a fun trip.
Maybe the big Magic highlight of the year for me. Definitely our gathering. So if you're new to the show or you didn't listen around then, we had a big gathering that we threw at GP Vegas.
Magic the Gathering.
We rented out a space in the Plaza Hotel on one of the nights, and we invited people to come play EDH. We gave away a bunch of stuff, as we always like to do. We also had free conspiracy drafts, and we were expecting, you know, somewhere in the realm of like 80 people. We ended up getting like 250 or so. Yeah.
Ran out of food and drink.
Ran out of tables. We had to like steal tables from the banquet halls next to us. Plaza Hotel was great. They really like gave us a lot of leeway. Yeah, we had to order a lot more food and drink because a lot more people came, which is a good problem to have.
It was amazing. We hosted our own mini, like, it felt like a little Grand Prix. It was cool.
It was definitely like the size of like a regional PTQ or something. I mean, yeah. 250 people is a lot. Yeah, people were just slinging spells all over the place. There was a lot of personalities from the Magic community there. It was a great deal of fun.
Yeah.
GP Vegas itself was great.
Getting to play just huge conspiracy drafts with like Modern Masters packs thrown in was so much fun. Some of the Wizards guys came by and contributed those packs, and I was like, oh my gosh, you guys are freaking sweethearts.
Yeah, Sean Gibbons showed up, and in his draft pod with Conspiracy, he just added Modern Masters packs to it. Friend of the show, Alexander Newman, added packs of the Dark
to
his Conspiracy draft. And then also, he took a bunch of the packs and he gave them to us, and he wanted us to give them away the show. And so this is related to the Deck Doctors series, which we started when we got back from Vegas. And it was something we'd been wanting to do. And then Alex giving us those packs was like, oh, this is a good prize we can give away to accompany the Deck Doctors. And so
now we have about 800 submissions of decks
We've got thousands. I mean, we're literally above thousands for the Deck Doctor submissions.
So we've done a few, which is awesome, and we're definitely going to keep going back to them because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, too, to sort of figure out the balance of what to add and what to take out and how to also break it down on the show. But we gave away packs of the Dark if you got your decks chosen, and we have one pack left.
So definitely there's at least one more Deck Doctors. After we run out of that, after we do that, we'll still do them. We'll still give stuff away. Yeah, you're right. They're a lot of work. But people ask for them constantly, and we still get submissions all the time, and we get asked all the time, are you still doing the Deck Doctors? Yes, we are. Send a tapped out link to our email. That's the best way to enter.
We got to get our PhD, man. We got to go back.
We got to go back.
We got to go back. Jack.
What's next on here?
The spoiler train. So we choo-choo. We hopped on the spoiler train. This actually started with Commander 2014. We got Impact Resonance as our first ever spoiler, and then we've gotten a couple of others since then, which is really exciting. So we got The Great Aurora, which was the spoiler for
Magic Origins. This actually started what I'm hoping is a trend, in that we've gotten a spoiler in every set since Magic Origins. So we got Impact Resonance, and then we didn't get a spoiler for the next couple of sets.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got onto Magic Origins, and then we got one for Battle for Zendikar, and then we
Sanctum of Ugin.
Yep, and then we got one for the Commander 2015 product.
Rite of the Raging Storm.
So we're hoping to continue that. We're hoping the leaks don't hurt us too much in that regard.
I hope so. If we don't get one for Oath of the Gatewatch, I will know why.
Yeah, it'll be too bad, but we do appreciate Wizards, you know, recognizing the show and letting us be, you know, letting us unveil like a card in every set.
It's a really high honor, because I know we do this because we love it, and it's awesome to sort of have that validation there as well.
Oh, this next one, Comic-Con.
Yeah, we went to San Diego Comic-Con this year, and we got to hang out with some cool peeps.
We got to pre-release that same weekend, because that was the Magic Origins pre-release weekend. Yep. And
I went 0-5.
I went 4-1, but the last guy I played had a Jace, and I still keep thinking, like, because I was like, why is he playing that Jace? That card is horrible.
You're crazy.
It wasn't very good in Limited. Oh.
But what is good is getting packs for Limited. That's right. We're giving away more boosters.
All
right.
I got this one. We're going to give it to Max at MTGJLP.
Oh, definitely a Magic player.
Yeah, I remember.
Or just has something else MTG related in his life.
It actually stats. It's his name. It's Matthew Travis Gideon.
His last name just happens to be Gideon.
Well, what do you want?
Amazing. I love it. That's all perfect.
Right. All right,
that's
Max. Great. Email us your address.
That's great. Yeah, we got the pre-release, and we got to hang out with Brian David Marshall, also known as BDM, Gavin Verhey, and a lot of the WotC peeps that were down there doing the presentation. And we also got to hang out with Brian Kibler, the Dragon
Yeah, Kibler
Master
was
himself.
At the pre-release. I wanted to play him really bad, but I didn't get to.
Yeah, I believe that is the LGS that he frequents.
And Kessler was there too, and Kessler actually 5-0'd that pre-release.
Yeah, I think he was the first place winner of the whole thing.
Good job, Kessler.
Good job, Kessler.
All right.
In September, we went back to one episode per week.
Yeah, so you know what? We have not heard a single complaint about it.
Thank goodness, because it was a lot of work, and I'm glad that we did it, but I'm also glad that people aren't like, why don't you have two episodes a week?
Yeah, Whew. People have been really, really understandable. In fact, we got a lot of notes saying, like, guys, two is...
Yeah.
Two, we totally understand. Yeah. Two is a lot.
Please don't burn out. We had a few emails like that, and you guys are so sweet for emailing us that.
For even thinking about whether we'd burn out or not. So, yep, we're back to one episode per week, but we will sometimes be doing two.
Yep, like we did a couple of weeks ago or a month ago or so. We'll talk about that as well. Goodbye to Eli Cuevas, who was our original editor for the show after Josh sort of did the first 10. And Eli, to his credit, he did those two episode weeks. That's tough. Two full videos of graphics and stuff to do every single week.
He was pumping them out.
Pumping them out.
Eli edited every episode from episode 10 to episode 81.
Wow.
So the bulk... by far of our show, he cut together. Anybody who watches the videos, Eli has had such a huge influence on how those look and how they work. You know, because episode 10 was when he started. We still weren't set in the way that we do everything.
Yeah.
So he was sort of like, every time anything new would happen, he would have to figure out how to make that work. So we were very sad to lose Eli. But we did pick up a friend of Eli. Actually referred us to Terry Robertson, who's our editor right now. He took over in episode 82. And Terry has brought a whole bunch to the table. The videos he's pumping out are very, very, very good.
Yeah, he's killing it.
Yeah. So if you've noticed, like, Terry likes to be a little more playful. He likes to add little, you know, outside images here and there, and maybe even little clips and sound effects and whatnot. And I think people have really responded to that. We've gotten a lot of comments about how good Terry's doing. So I know Terry's listening right now. Terry, good on you. Keep it up.
Thumbs up, buddy. You're killing it. Super appreciate all the work that you're doing. And, of course, also doing the revisions when we get back at you at things that need little things that need tweaking and stuff. Thanks for being professional.
So, you know, if you're listening to this in the comment section on Rocket Jump or YouTube, give Terry a good shout. He's putting in a lot of work, and he's doing a great job.
Ayo. Ooh. This one's fun.
This was, this has to be your coolest moment of the year.
GB Vegas meetup was pretty great. But yeah, this was pretty awesome too. So speaking of Wizards recognizing us and giving us validation, I got asked to go to the Community Cup this year, which was really exciting. I went with a bunch of other streamers and creators, including the Magic the Amateuring ladies, Kenji Egashira, a.k.a. Numa the Nummy, Gabrielle, a.k.a. SG Doc, Wedge from the Mana Source,
Joel Larson,
Stiborski, Stibbs himself. That was a lot of fun. We played and we beat the Wizards team. We smacked them around. Actually, it was really close and really stressful. But I got to play Balfour's Zendikar before everyone else. It was really cool.
And you were part of the first Commander game ever played at the Community Cup.
Yeah, and it was an epic one. I'm so glad it turned out the way it did, because I think it was an awesome sort of spotlight on how the game is and like how crazy it can get and how much fun it was as well. Even though it was just taking extra turns, which we talk about, like, I'm not that interested in that. It's like, doesn't matter. It was still actually a very enjoyable time.
Plus, you won us all stuff.
Yeah, everyone on Magic Online got a full set of the Unhinged Lands foiled.
Pretty sweet. I still have them.
Yeah, me too.
The next one's you too.
Yeah, I went to PAX this year as well. I got to play in sort of like they had a little fun event where we played people that were at the convention, and you could play like freaking Mark Rosewater and stuff, or Will Wheaton and stuff, and that was really exciting. But I got to reveal Kozilek's Channeler. Great card.
Do you think they'll reprint an Oath of the Gatewatch, except now it says tap, add, diamond, diamond?
I hope not, because then you open your like Battle for Zendikar pack and it's just different. Like
Kozilek's Channeler can't even cast Kozilek.
Yeah. Well, he can, but
he just has retconned. To be retconned. Yeah. Sure, you're right. He can.
That was funny. Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. PAX was amazing. Wizards had a huge show of this year because they took over the entire annex. So it was just like three floors dedicated to Magic. The Lady Planeswalker Society that was there teaching people how to play. So huge shout out to them for working that whole weekend and introducing probably tons of people to the game.
Didn't they have a huge Emrakul, like picking up a police car?
Yeah, it was a giant Eldrazi. I don't know if they specify which.
It looked like Emrakul, though, right? Yeah. It looked like Emrakul tentacle, spaghetti. Yeah.
Spaghetti arms, grabbing a police car and like wrecking it into like a street lamp. It was really sweet.
Yeah, it got me really excited that there was going to be Emrakul, and then there wasn't.
Maybe it was Ulamog, who knows?
Ulamog doesn't look like that.
Everyone has tentacles, though. I mean, if it's a spawn of Emrakul.
Yeah, it's true. I think it was just generic Eldrazi.
Yeah. It was either way, it was awesome. It's a giant structure. The photos from that event were great. So that was a ton of fun as well.
Then in late October, hang on.
In late October, we decided that we were going to give away more stuff before the end of the year. So we're going to give away some more booster packs. This next winner's name is Jake's T at Jake Weffington.
Jake Weffington.
Congrats. You have won some booster packs. Email your mailing address, commandcast@rocketjump.com, because you're a winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah, Jake, and it might be Wee Thing Ton. I don't know. It's Weethington. I think Weffington's correct.
Okay, Jake, we need your address. All right, on to the next highlight of 2015. Oh, yeah. So in late October, we did our first episode of The Sideboard.
Kind
of
cool.
We alluded to this earlier. This is sort of our way that we're sometimes going to still do two episodes per week. It's just going to be intermittent and when we feel like it. So our Sideboard episode, I had really a lot of fun doing it. It was about Battle for Zendikar draft.
Mm-hmm.
So it's us branching out, talking about a different area of Magic than Commander, something I think we're going to do more in the future.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Also, if you guys have ideas for Sideboard episodes that you would like us to cover this or that, let us know. You can let us know in the comments on Rocket Jump YouTube or on Twitter. We actually, after that, got on the front page of Magic the Gathering Online because we brought in Adam Prosak to talk about the Legendary Cube, which was on Magic Online. So we were on the front page of MTGO when you loaded it up. We were kind of cool.
That was a pretty good big moment. I feel like from the late half of this year with the Community Cup, this and then the next thing that happened, we really kind of got the endorsement of Wizards a little bit as far as like them calling us out and
thanks guys
them contacting us actually about interviewing Adam was very cool. And I hope you got a chance to try out the Legendary Cube. It's not there anymore, but Adam,
just give him a taste.
And then sort of the last big highlight of this year was recently on the Mothership, which is what they call the Wizards official website, Bruce Richard wrote an article about his favorite Magic podcast, and we were mentioned.
Yay!
So we forgot to mention this for the last couple weeks because it was a couple weeks ago that he wrote the article. We forgot to give him a shout, But Bruce does do commander content on the mothership, and so it's pretty flattering to be called out by him as one of his favorite podcasts.
Yeah, and it was great. I loved his review because he talked about, you know, it's like, well, these guys are a little more competitive, a little more spiky, and but I still can't stop listening. I was like, that's high praise. I really liked what he said. So thank you, Bruce. I appreciate it. All right. Oh, we had a ton of guests this year, and actually just in general on the show. We love to bring on guest speakers, people to talk about certain topics, and it's awesome because we can help, in some cases, break them into the community and let them know about the services they offer. Other times, we can throw people to another podcast that we support. So Brainstorm Brewery, we've had Corbin Hostler? I'm not sure. Sorry, Corby. And Jason Alt were both on the podcast. Jason,
those are our Dyson buddies.
Yeah. It's awesome. We had a great time at GP Vegas playing craps with those guys.
Yeah, that's very awesome to sort of have them on our show and then get to know them better. We also had Donald Miner, who is the creator of EDH Rec.
Yeah.
And we had him first.
We had him first. Yeah, take that, everyone else that had this awesome
like
website.
Wedge and Prof who crashed his website.
we like gave it a little nudge.
We had a pretty good bump for that moment in time, but then Wedge and Prof decided to come along and just blow us out the water. Yeah. Speaking of Wedge and Prof,
they were both on the episode, an episode as well. They both guested and we just sort of hung out and talked to them, and it was a really fun episode. Prof recapped a lot of stuff.
Prof's probably the professor from Tulare Community College, I should say, is probably our second most the person we've had on the second most after Craig is my guess.
Yeah,
he's been on like four or five times. Good friend of ours, a guy we really love, and we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, next up we had Magic the Amateuring, Megan and Maria. We were on their show, and they were on our show. That was a lot of fun. Good luck, high five. Those girls are hilarious. If you guys haven't checked out Magic the Amateuring, please check it out. They do a lot of limited talk, and they're both so funny. I think they're hilarious.
That's the thing. It's called Magic the Amateuring, which I know probably turns some people off because they're like, I'm not an amateur, I'm blah, 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 or I don't want to be an amateur. Listen, the show is just straight entertaining.
Yeah, it's very
It's just a comedy show. It's really, really good. And they're actually really good at magic. They, at the Community Cup, Megan and Maria were like kicking butt.
Yeah, they kicked a lot, but I think they both 3-0'd a pod at some point. So I never even came close.
they were seriously carrying the team sometimes. They're very good.
It was great. That was awesome.
It was fun having them on and talking Commander. They're not big Commander players, but we're trying to fix that.
Yes.
We also had the Reverend in Fuego from BJ Shea's Geek Nation on.
Yeah.
I really like Rev. We got to hang out a lot at GP Vegas. He's a very cool guy.
Yeah, I saw him in Seattle as well when I was up for PAX.
So. Yeah, so he's a fun guy. We got to get him back on.
Yeah, and you guys should check out BJ Shea's Geek Nation also if you have not. We had the Space Janitors, Andy Hull and Brendan Halloran from the now Andy's actually doing the Commander's Brew podcast, which we've talked about. They take decks with cool themes and make budget fun decks out of them for EDH, and it's a huge challenge, and it's also a lot of fun because it's sort of two friends always brewing off against each other.
Yeah, and they're very budget-oriented, which is great. And also, I'm wondering, the Space Janitors, I mean, they got to be doing something with The Force Awakens coming out. Like, right?
Who knows? I talked to both those guys. They had some stuff in the works. I don't know if it was Star Wars related or not, but they've got some stuff brewing.
We also had our good friend Phil DeLuca from the Commanderin podcast. In fact, he announced the Commanderin podcast and the fact that it was going to exist and happen on our show. So that was a great honor.
That was really nice. Yeah, I love Phil. Great guy. He also made me so jealous. He recently went to Japan and bought some booster packs to not give to us because we have our own to give away right now on the show. Oh my gosh, here we go.
I got this one.
Oh, you got it? Okay, cool.
Okay. Carly Ann at CAARRLE28.
Nice.
At Carly28.
Carly28.
Carly, congrats. We need your address to send you your booster packs. Okay, back to Phil.
Commandcast@rocketjump.com. Yeah, Phil, he bought all these cards from Japan that were from the Commander products, from just singles, and I went to Japan and did the same thing, but seeing him do it as well.
Well, he was there for like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my gosh, all these cards were like a third the cost of what they are in America, and they're Japanese, and they're so cool looking.
That reminds me, Phil, you're back from Japan. When are we playing?
Yeah, man. When are you going to give me all your cards you got? Just kidding. Yeah, so that was really awesome. So, Phil, check out the Commanderin podcast if you have not as well. Also at GP Vegas, we got Christine Sprankle. See Sprankle run the most famous legendary Magic the Gathering cosplayer out there. You may have seen the image of her as Avacyn, Angel of Hope, in front of the Vegas Welcome to Vegas sign.
It has become like one of the iconic images of Magic the Gathering, period.
Which is so cool.
It was in Rolling Stone magazine. It's just if you, I think if, even if you Google like Magic Gathering, it's one of the top images that comes up. She has become sort of one of the faces of the game just by virtue of, you know, being so amazing at like her cosplay and her costumes.
Yeah.
That outfit was amazing. We got pictures of her. Luckily, we got to have her guest on the show. We need to have her come back on and talk about her Kalia deck when it's
Oh, yeah. I'd love for that to happen. Yeah. So that costume was awesome. And inside the Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas with like the solar flare behind, it was just great. It was the costume so well made. So, Christine, major props. You kick butt. During the Tuck Rule debate, we actually got Sheldon Mennery, the sort of grandfather of EDH and a person on the rules committee, to be on the show. And we got to talk to him and sort of have a civil discourse about the ruling. His reasoning behind it, our sort of arguments for and against it as well, and sort of just have a nice, lively, spirited debate on what we thought about the ruling, which is really cool.
Yeah, it was very cool of Sheldon to come on, because at the moment we asked him to come on, we had released an episode that was pretty critical of the Tuck Rule change in general. And he really went out of his way. We had to do it late. He was recording with another podcast right before us.
Yeah, I had to rush home from like a birthday dinner.
Yeah, and we had to get that done. And he was very gracious in the way that he did it. And I know me specifically, I've been criticized for not like sort of like hardballing him a lot more. And this is one of the things I say, which is that for one, I did question him, but also like I wanted to be respectful because he was going out of his way to be on our show. And it's not like he's getting paid or something. It's, you know, nor are we. So we wanted, really the goal of that show was to give the rules committee's side of why they made the change and everything, because we'd already had our piece and already stated our reasons for why we didn't like it.
Good point.
So a lot of respect to Sheldon for coming on our show in what could have been, you know, he didn't know. He didn't know how combative we might be. So a lot of respect to him for that.
Yep, big props. We also had A.E. Marling on the show. A.E. Marling is a he's the Vorthos guy. He knows everything about the lore. He also cosplays, and he was at Vegas cosplaying alongside Christine Sprankle, and we got to interview him on that episode. So congrats. Thanks for coming on the show, bud.
Sean Gibbons, a friend of ours, formerly worked at Wizards. He was also on the show on that same episode. Somebody we hung out a lot at GP Vegas. Really good guy.
Yep. And then I got to meet this guy later in the year. Graham from Loading Ready Run popped on the show. And we talked about his Sapling of Kolfinar deck.
Right.
That was a lot of fun, sort of a tribal trees.
Tribal trees.
Tree tribal.
It was also a half of a level up episode because we did talk about threat assessment.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, we had flavor text writer and card namer James Pionka was on the show for the second time. He was actually in one of our very early episodes.
And I love these episodes with James. He like shows so much about the set that I just never even think about, which is great.
And it really shows to you the work and the passion that people put into every aspect of the game, because the way that people like James think about, you know, what we'd consider, maybe we wouldn't even think about, like just the name of that card. And it's how much thought goes into just naming every card. And it really shows you why Magic is such a great game, because every little piece of it has so much passion and thought put into it.
Yeah. And I guess James is affected by the leaks as well, because, you know, when you see all these card names in a row, you just don't stop to think about Nissa, comma, this. You're just like, oh, there's a new Nissa.
Yeah, there's 12 cards, so you just go to the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Craig Blanchett, longtime friend of this show.
Really co-host almost at this point, although we haven't had him on in a while.
Yeah, it's true. We got to bring him back on. So Craig usually comes on for set reviews or to talk about Infect or other hit Craig things.
Or if we run out of our own decks to talk about, Craig has so many that we can always bring him on.
Craig is the person that introduced me to the game originally alongside you, Josh. And we've To the format, yeah. We've been playing this game with him probably the longest out of all of our current friends.
Yeah, and we've talked a little bit about Craig's Cube, which we helped put together, and we have a lot of fun doing that. In fact, that might be a sideboard episode.
That
would
be a great sideboard episode.
It's a multiplayer cube.
Yeah.
And then finally, our most recent guest was Adam Prozac, who is one of the game designers at Wizards of the Coast. He came on and talked about designing the Legendary Cube on Magic Online and his job. And yeah, it was very cool. It's always cool to have people that work at Wizards on the show.
Yeah, they always have cool stories and stuff and just things that you did not think about the game or know about the game before. And so sorry if we missed anyone. Please let us know. We had a lot of guests this year. We were also guests on other shows. So thank you to the people that invited us on. We've already mentioned a few of these. Brainstorm Brewery, you were on, Josh. Magic the Amateuring. Actually, we were both on Brainstorm Brewery. Mm-hmm. Magic the Amateuring, we were on. Commanderin. Monday Night Magic, the Masters of Modern, our sister podcast. BJ Shea's Geek Nation. And Walking the Plains for the PAX episode.
Very cool. Always great to be asked to be on other people's shows. It's always fun to go on, and it allows us to sort of broaden our horizons too. And Yeah, get the show out there to new audiences too, which is great. All right. We thought it'd be fun here to sort of maybe answer a couple of questions. These aren't questions from the audience. These are questions from us.
Oh, nice.
So, Jimmy.
Yes.
What was your favorite Command Zone moment from the last year and why?
Oh, my gosh.
I predicted what it might be, but
really?
Maybe that's not it.
I think my favorite Command Zone moment is still GP Vegas' meetup. It was so cool. We spent a lot of time figuring it out and like just seeing all the people come out and the event itself that whole weekend. It was awesome hanging out with people that loved the same game that you did and wanted to go out and like play craps and play EDH and talk Magic and draft Chaos Drafts and just sort of do all that awesome, fun, ridiculous, crazy stuff in Vegas together. It felt almost like a little dream. It was like, this doesn't happen normally. It was great.
Yeah, it's my favorite moment as well. It was also the way that we got to meet a lot of the content creators that we later in the year and still next year and the year after that are going to be able to collaborate with and do things with. It was just a really good way to sort of break the ice with them. And
I felt like that really solidified the community that we had growing up until that point too.
For real. All right. What episode of the show, or episodes, I guess, are you the most proud of from the last year?
Jeez. We did a lot. I am excited to say that I'm proud of all of them, Josh. Just kidding.
You don't have a favorite?
I don't know if I really do have a favorite, honestly. I think I really loved doing the Color Wheel series.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. I think people enjoyed that quite a bit, too. And it's a little different step. I think because Commander allows you to be more caring about the flavor and having more fun with the game as a casual format, I think it's always cool to do stuff like the top 10 lists and stuff because those help people just sort of get an idea on what they like card-wise, and then the color wheel stuff helps people understand why they like color stuff. And I'm Jimmy the Red, and, you know.
You just want to understand, why am I so red?
Episode 66 is Red the Color Wheel series. Every 6 minutes, we're giving away packs.
Is that coincidence? You decide. My favorite episode is probably the Politips and Politrix episode.
Oh, very nice.
What is that, 43, I want to say?
Yeah, Politips.
It is, 43. Yeah. That's the reason I love Commander. It's the part of the game I think that I'm the best at. And I just really liked that episode, and it really came together. And it actually made me, when we were doing that episode and mapping it out, I learned a lot. Because,
oh, nice.
You know, I think I said that on that episode, but it was forcing me to look at myself, like take a step back while I was playing and being like, you're doing this stuff. Why are you doing it?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and so, yeah, I even learned a lot just doing it. Just doing that episode.
Yeah, I like doing it. When you write the outlines, you actually end up learning about that topic even more than you thought you knew.
Yeah, because you're like, I do this. Why do I do this? And then you break it down and you're like, holy crap. You know, and it might change your mind, or it might just clarify things for you. So,
how about this? What is the best / most awesome / funniest Command Zone moment of 2015?
Wow.
It was a very boring year. There's not that much that happened.
There's. I'm trying to think of a single best moment.
That's tough to think of a single best moment. I've also realized that in recent weeks, and maybe it's just in the past, I don't know, 20 episodes or so, we've laughed way more than we normally, like, making cracking jokes is like a huge part of the show now, which is great.
I think that's part of us finding our sea legs.
Yeah.
And part of, you know, us sort of getting comfortable with the mic too. I think it took us a little while, especially in the early episodes. I think the there's two things. Mingo Malingo. Because
just thinking about Mingo.
I did not expect it to take off like it did. You know, sometimes we say things and nobody says anything. And then sometimes, for whatever reason, we just make up a guy named Mingo Malingo. And then people were like creating cards and like talking. They still talk about Mingo Malingo.
Yeah, they bring him. He's like a throwback joke. It's great.
So Mingo Malingo may be my favorite moment.
Mingo Malingo, by the way, is Kiki Jiki's sort of just unaccomplished brother, his younger sibling that just hasn't, just can't live up to the hype that Kiki Jiki is. That actually ties into the next one, which is the most surprising audience response to a moment, episode, topic.
Yeah.
Because the way that you guys took Mingo Malingo, that I was floored. I was so happy to see everyone make the fake cards for Mingo.
I definitely didn't expect that. I would say the other surprising response was the when we were really begging on Kamel.
Oh yeah.
So Dragon Lord Kolaghan, who I still despise to this day and think it was just bad design, and really a lot of people reacted negatively to me specifically reacting negatively to just the Elder Dragons.
Sounds about right.
But I feel very vindicated because the Elder Dragons suck. No one plays them.
Yeah.
And
Dramoko sees some play, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. And But for our format that's named after Elder Dragons, it still does irk me that they created a bunch of Elder Dragons that aren't even that great for us.
Yeah, they're not the best commanders, especially Kaemal, Qolagon.
It's who's specifically bad in Commander. Not yeah. completely unusable. People are like, well, what about Shadowborn Apostles decks? And
find a way to play it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I think one of my favorite moments is, I think, Josh going into the Mother of Runes. That was great.
Mother of Runes!
Josh showcasing all these talents I didn't know. You could sing, you can do a Scottish accent, or Irish, I suppose.
Well, yeah. It's supposed to be Scottish. I might be doing it wrong, so it sounds Irish. But
you know, as dirty Americans, we love giving boosters away.
We're gonna give away some boosters.
I was gonna say we're bad at doing accents, but
what are you talking about?
We're gonna give away some boosters.
All right, it's my turn, I think.
It's always been your turn.
Your turn, my turn. Here, you hold it. Okay. Yeah,
all right.
We got Australian sometimes. It's cute noob 18 at cute noob underscore 18. I guess this person is a noob and is also cute. And
hella cute.
Is either the age 18 or the 18th person named that. I'm not sure.
Hey, could be anything.
Send us your mailing address. You know the email.
All right. So those are the questions we've asked ourselves. Let's talk a little bit about the future.
What does the future hold, Jimmy?
So in Magic, hopefully we've had two Modern Master sets in the last 3 years.
Please.
We've also had a conspiracy set. Conspiracy 2?
Please, Conspiracy 2, please.
I think that would be my single most hyped thing if that was announced. I'd be so excited.
I mean, I'm currently more excited for Conspiracy 2, the possibility of it, than I am for any other thing that could happen. That will be so awesome. We loved Conspiracy. We love Conspiracy maybe more than anyone else on the planet, based upon how many people at like GP Vegas were like, I never drafted this set, or I only drafted this one time. And we're like, we drafted this 3,700 times.
Yeah, the amount of comments and the comments I have from that are just sitting around, or that pile goes to the roof.
I still have like 10 boxes of it sitting around.
It's amazing.
And we drafted like 2 cases. So
yeah, not to mention you can also pull some amazing cards from there, like foil Marchesa and foil Dak Faden. Those are like the big chase cards of that set. But yeah, the set's awesome. It has tons of cool cards, like Will of the Council is in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Introduced whole new mechanics, was a multiplayer draft format, which was a dream come true, I think, for Commander players.
Boxes of it are still not that expensive. So if you weren't like playing Magic at the time when Conspiracy came out, it's not that hard to get a hold of a box and go draft it with your pals right now. It is awesome. You should totally do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It makes me want to do that right now.
Yeah, and we're also moving on. Of course, now we are going to be full into the 2 sets per block paradigm for Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, they're going to be interesting times just to see how that changes things. For Commander players, you may be thinking, well, that's not a big deal because I don't play Standard, but it does change, you know, rotation changes the price of cards.
Yeah, totally.
Which definitely affects us.
Standard is going to be changing and shifting a lot faster as well, so I think prices are going to be a little more woo all over the place because of it.
And it'll take a little while for people to sort of settle into that rhythm, so I think there's going to be some advantages and disadvantages, at least for the first year or so. So just keep an eye on that. It's going to be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I mean, listen, Commander 2015 just came out. But the thing is, it wasn't 4-color Commanders.
It was not.
So that means next year has a better chance of being 4-color Commanders, right?
Than ever.
I mean, it has to happen sometime. He said,
yeah, Mauro has said that, like, yeah, this will happen, potentially, maybe. I think it will.
I mean, we got 3-color Commanders 2 years in a row, right? We got some Wedges and Shards, right?
Yep.
And then we got Mono.
Yep.
And then we got the enemy pairs, right?
And now we're on to year 2016.
It's either allied pairs or 4 colors, right? Or it's 5-color, but I don't think they're going to do 5-color.
No. How do you release 5 different decks of 5-color?
So there's a 50-50 chance at the very least, right? Because unless they just decide and do more Wedges or something.
I'm really excited. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. I really hope it's 4-color. That'd be really fun.
That's my second most look forward to thing if it were to happen.
Outside of Conspiracy 2?
Conspiracy 2 is like tier 1 excitement, and then 4-color Commander is like tier 1.5 excitement.
Yep. It's also gonna be interesting to see what happens now that we have this new diamond mana, 4-colorless mana, if they include that into a lot of the new future sets, or if it's just gonna sort of just be a thing that they've retconned with Oath of the Gatewatch, and we'll just see it slowly pop up in different cards over the years, and whether or not it's gonna make a difference in other sets if there will be spells that force you to have to use colorless mana to cast it.
Yeah, gonna be really interesting to see how often it pops up. I mean, it could easily be something that we never see again. I think they've said that it will show up again, but
not as
who knows what that means. That could mean like one set 5 years from now.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to be wasting common slots, so they can give us wastes in booster packs as well for limited if they really need it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. All right, let's talk about the future for this show, The Command Zone.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to get to episode 100 soon.
Oh my gosh, I totally spaced that. We got to start thinking about what we're going to do.
It'll just be another episode. We'll see. We'll do something fun, I'm sure.
If you have any cool ideas for something we should do for episode 100, please send them in. Tweet at us. Put it in the comments, whatever, because we need ideas.
We're finally going to do more Deck Doctors. It's our number one requested show type, so we're going to get back on that train for you guys. Don't worry, and we'll give away that last pack of the dark. And also, anyone that gets their deck doctored will still win stuff. So, good stuff.
Diversity of content we have written down here, and this is an interesting one and something that we definitely want to do more of next year. So like the sideboard episodes, which are not necessarily commander related, but they're magic related, mm-hmm. It's just branching out into sort of other parts of magic that we enjoy, because we love commander and the main show will always be about commander, but we also sort of devour all kinds of magic content, magic formats. So we may be building modern decks to play in GPLA.
I'm definitely building a modern deck. It's going to be red.
So there'll probably be some sideboard episode about that. We're going to continue to draft. We're going to, you know, try other things. We've maybe got a cube sideboard episode.
Yep.
And not just that.
You've been tweeting out some pictures recently, Josh.
So we did. We've talked about it a few times. We did a collaboration, or we're doing a collaboration with the mm-hmm. professor from Tolarian Community, and this is a totally different kind of content. Well, hold on.
You know it's even better content? The kind that ends in people's mailboxes in the form of three booster packs. We have another winner. Congratulations to Jeremy Catbot. Emra Kool-Aid Man.
Is that really his name?
Yeah, great, great.
Emerald
username.
Kool-Aid Man?
Well, it's at Jeremy Catbot, and he's Emerald Kool-Aid Man, which is freaking hilarious. So congrats, you've won more boosters. Commandcast at rocketjump.com.
So this cool collaboration with the professor, this is really more along the lines of what you and I do professionally.
Yes.
For a career, this is fictionalized content, scripted content. There'll be some visual effects in there.
Yep.
They're comedy.
Short little comedy skits.
Comedy sketches. We haven't given away a lot. We are about to spoil the main title.
And it's not going to get leaked because we are in control.
That's right. So no pictures of it will be out here before this episode comes out, I hope.
I mean, I might leak it.
It'll be really hard to find who caught it. Jimmy, was it you?
Was it you?
Yes.
It's like, yeah, I tweeted it. Like, I can see.
I saw it on your Twitter.
Yeah.
The series is going to be called Kitchen Table Fables.
Very nice.
So you can take from that what you will. They're going to hit. Well, we don't have a hard deadline, but it'll definitely be fairly soon.
Fairly soon, yeah.
Yeah, so we're getting close to wrapping those up. There will be a few episodes, and then based upon how that goes, we'll probably be doing more.
Yeah, so congratulations to everyone that won boosters on this episode. Because I'm leaving town in 3 days, you can actually look forward to getting those in January, because I won't be back to mail them until then, and we won't even know who the winners are. Well, you guys won't be able to send your address until I'm not in this country anymore.
Make sure you do email us your mailing address as soon as possible. It just makes it easier to sort of keep them all in one place.
Yep.
And Jimmy will be sending out the prizes in the beginning of January.
And I would request that if you're an international viewer, I somehow magically always randomly pick a bunch of international viewers, please send me the mailing address in as full form as possible. A lot of times I've had to look up the address on Google Maps or whatever to figure out what the correct formatting is and stuff. So just try and send that as clearly as possible. It helps make sure that your package does not get bounced on the way to you.
All right. We're going to be skipping the end step today because the whole last part of the episode is basically an end step.
Pretty much.
But we do want to say to everyone, thank you so much for going on this wonderful ride with us.
Yeah.
It has been a great year. We look forward to an even better 2016. And here's wishing all of you out there a happy holidays.
And a happy new year. We'll see you guys back on January 12th.
Don't forget to check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, with Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. You can find them on the podcast tab at rocketjump.com. @MMMcast. You can follow them on Twitter @TheMMcast.
Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Very special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card Animations @LivingCardsMTG on Twitter. These guys have been killing it recently. Please check out all the awesome stuff that Terry has done for these videos. YouTube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. Watch them all. Set them to a playlist. Play them in the background while you bake your holiday cookies. You can do lots of fun stuff.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next year.
Peace. Surprise! We're actually not done yet. We have one more prize to give away. If you paid attention last week, we said that we were going to give away a Fat Pack for Battle for Zendikar, so you can have all those glorious full art lands.
Nice.
So we're doing one more giveaway. This person is going to win the Fat Pack. I hope that you listen to the entire episode. It's a little bit tricksy of us.
It pains me to announce who this person is because, as you guys all know, I'm a Seattle Seahawks fan. So Austin at Patriot fan 09.
Ooh,
congrats.
Well, you know, it's truly random because Jimmy never would have chosen this person.
Yeah, absolutely not. No, just kidding. Yeah, it's random. Congrats, Austin. You've won a Battle for Zendikar Fat Pack. Email us, commandcast@rocketjump.com. Josh, thank you for being so generous and providing such a great prize.
Hey, it's all for the show, man. And Jimmy, you do so much work sending this stuff out. It's the least I could do.
Yeah, a couple trips to the post office. Many more trips than I normally take.
Yeah, how could I be considered generous when Jimmy is donating all of his time to just sending out the prizes?
You know. All right. We both get there.
All right, Patriots fan, enjoy your Fat Pack. And everybody else, I said it once, I'll say it again. Peace.
Out.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.